How do you follow that? I'm Conor Maguire. I'm a clinician based in Edinburgh, and I'm hosting questions and answers at this stage for the next 15 minutes. First of all, I can say I found that inspirational, beautifully presented. I have not seen slides as clear and as beautifully presented as that in my many years as a clinician. So I'll hand over to the floor at this stage. There are roaming microphones. If you're able to get to one, there's also microphones on the walls at the side. So if you want to ask a question, if you can put your hand up. Can we get a microphone down here near the front?
Thank you. You mentioned in your interesting talk about the incidence of patients taking ibuprofen at a lower getting Parkinson's. Is there any evidence that patients taking any other drugs get an increased susceptibility to Parkinson's? I'm thinking in terms of sleeping tablets.
Well, statins were recently suggested to be associated with a higher incidence of Parkinson's, or patients taking statins, although there have been prior studies suggesting that statins could be protective. Now, with regard to other medications that are associated with an increased incidence, not off the top of my head, there are drugs that can cause Parkinson's. There's even a toxin that was produced by heroin addicts. They were trying to make a synthetic morphine analog. And when they were trying to make this, they accidentally made a molecule called MPTP. And when you inject that into your blood, you basically get Parkinson's within a few days. So there are ways of specifically killing dopamine neurons, but in terms of medications taken by people...
The one I was thinking of was citalopram. I haven't heard
that that is associated with an increased risk of Parkinson's, but that it's possible, but I haven't heard that. I know of other things that are protective, and you probably have heard of them too, and that's coffee and smoking. So the coffee part we're allowed to talk about, the smoking we can... just say quietly, it's smoking doesn't seem to cause, it actually seems to protect against Parkinson's.
Thank you.
This is a question given to me by a member of the audience to ask on their behalf. In your opinion, should Parkinson's medication commence at the onset of symptoms or later?
So, my disclaimer is that I don't practice. I've practiced for 21 years now. I've been doing laboratory research, but to the best of my knowledge, standing next to a clinician, is that today it should begin when you are diagnosed. But of course, there's such a wide arsenal of dopaminergic drugs today, so you don't have to begin with L-DOPA. There are enzyme inhibitors that might be more suitable for the first couple of years. You know, this debate on delaying L-DOPA would be a good thing. I think the final word on that is that it doesn't really help to delay L-DOPA. So there are so many different drugs that act on the dopamine system today that the arsenal that the doctors have is much better than it was, although they all are about as effective as L-DOPA.
I was just adding, traditionally we used to try and delay because there was this idea that within 5 years of having a diagnosis, 50% of people on L-DOPA would have disabling side effects. And more recent large studies of people on L-DOPA has found that there isn't a huge difference. So there's a tendency to start treatment earlier than there may have been, let's say, 5 or 10 years ago.
If you look at the poor people who injected MPTP, this drug, who developed Parkinson's very, very rapidly, within weeks, they developed these dyskinesias very rapidly. So the development of dyskinesias is an effect of the L-DOPA drug, but also related to how much of the dopamine system is degenerated. So delaying the L-DOPA might not be the answer, because it's a question of how much you've lost of your dopamine system.
I wonder if you have any indication of how some of these new developments in treating Parkinson's work or are likely to work with the non-motor aspects, like speech, for example.
So To start with, let's take inflammation as an example. So there are hints that inflammation could be important for some of the non-motor features, such as depression and fatigue. So one would hypothesize that if we find a drug that is effective, an anti-inflammatory drug, it might be beneficial for these aspects. If we take another non-motor symptom, which is one of the most feared ones, I would say, is cognitive decline. There's reason to believe that the cognitive decline is related to the spreading of Lewy bodies. Now, if spreading of Lewy bodies is coupled to this, what we call the prion-like hypothesis, that the protein jumps from one cell to another, then any therapy that mops up alpha-synuclein, whilst it's jumping from one cell to another, might delay the onset or even prevent cognitive decline. So those are examples. Speech, I don't have a particular answer to that one. You all know, I think, that speech is tricky because whilst deep brain stimulation is a fantastic therapy, when it comes to speech, it can actually be problematic and worsen speech.
Thank you. There's a question down the front here, and then there afterwards.
Thank you. Some of us have great difficulty getting a diagnosis. I've been trying hard to get beyond Parkinsonism recently and have been told something about multiple systems atrophy as a possibility from my consultant just recently, although he didn't say that in the consultation. The other problem is that many older people now have other conditions, and getting involved in trials with other conditions or sorting out drugs with other conditions is yet another complication.
Absolutely right, and there are studies showing, depending who's doing the diagnosis, that the error in diagnosis is somewhere between 5%, if it's an experienced clinical team, up to 45%. I think there was a Welsh study in from a cohort of patients who'd been diagnosed by general practitioners, 45% were misdiagnosed. So, but I think in general, you know, the misdiagnosis is in the range of 5 to 10% perhaps. Because it's not that easy in some cases. And these other diseases, you mentioned multiple system atrophy, they look very similar at the beginning of the disease. And this highlights the need for something else, which is biomarkers. So something that we could measure in the blood or in the spinal fluid, or something that we could see on a PET scan or a DAT scan, which would say this is definitely Parkinson's and this is another type of related disease. Mm-hmm. Those things are in the pipeline. And there are more and more of these tools emerging. At the moment, none of them are really useful in Parkinson's, but I would think 10 years from now, we will have figured this out. And there are tools to image alpha-synuclein being developed in animals now, tested in pigs, so they can look at the alpha-synuclein if it's aggregated in the brain in an experimental form of Parkinson's in pigs.
What would the difference be in treatment if some of these other conditions were diagnosed?
Well, that's a great question. You know, there is no effective treatment for MSA. I told you, we still don't have that perfect treatment that will slow down Parkinson's. So I can't answer what the differences will be. You know, if we're lucky, maybe immunotherapy will be helpful both in MSA and in Parkinson's because some of the molecular pathology is similar, different but has similarity.